Saturday mornings offer small group studies for all ages, food and fellowship, plus worship and main service. Wednesday nights host interactive Bible studies. We are a unique blend of people from different backgrounds in all stages of life. Come worship with us, grow with us, serve with us. Downtown Leslie and at newlifeleslie.com.
You and I cannot be useful if we want to be sweet as honey in the mouths of men. God will never bless us if we wish to please men, that they may think well of us. Are you willing to tell them what will break your own heart in the telling and break theirs in the hearing? If not, you are not fit to serve the Lord. You must be willing to go and speak for God, though you will be rejected. Charles Spurgeon, an early American preacher.
Real Talk. Truths for Today's World is brought to you by Family Hope Radio.
Thank you, Cove Creek Emporium, located on Highway 66 in Leslie, Arkansas, for your financial support of 88.1 FM Family Hope Radio.
Another important discussion on the public square this week. I'm Wayne Shepherd here with Dave Zanotti and the team. It seems like I'm always saying important discussion, Dave, but these issues never stop, do they? This week, is abortion more than politics? And we have our team here, Jeff Sanders, Anna Welch at the table today, and Sherry Eisen here as well, and Rob Olgate, our producer, is Alan C. Duncan. Dave, is abortion more than politics?
And don't touch that dial.
Yeah.
I can understand that people are overwhelmed, saturated, and largely looking to escape this conversation because it's everywhere, Wayne. I mean, we have the privilege of being both in public policy and in media. And we have a series of sources that we check every day, and they're not small, with all the different media connections that we have going on every day with different programs around the country, different hosts, along with everything we're doing with the public square, with 1850 Main Street, with Kids on the Square. We're blessed. We're incredibly blessed. We search a lot of news sites. And I'm going to tell you, every day, some major news site is using the abortion question as their major, major story. And I say using the abortion question because it does seem like the answer to this question, is abortion more than politics, is maybe, but probably not this year. Because it seems like it's all about politics this year. So what we want to do is we want to try to do, I guess what I'd say would be group therapy for all of us. We want to start to break this down. We want to break this down in a way that when we come away from this thing, there hopefully is a redemptive spark that flows through the merit of this conversation to give people hope that this is still worth talking about, still worth thinking about, and that there is a pathway here that might bring us closer to justice. That's the hope. So hang in there with us. It's going to take about an hour.
At least.
It's going to take a while. And that's the first point. So let's do this. I want to start off by we're not going to bury the lead here. We're going to go right into this right from the start. I want to start off with this idea. Rand Paul was recently on the Clay and Buck show. That's heard across the iHeart Network and many other stations. And he was commenting about a number of issues, including President Trump's recent statement on abortion.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state.
Senator Paul, what do you think about Donald Trump's recent proclamation on where he stands for the issue of abortion as a state's rights issue versus being vocal about wanting some federal legislation on it? How do you see that constitutionally and politically?
For 50 years, those of us in the pro-life movement have marched to overturn Roe v. Wade. And now in the face of victory, people are saying, oh, it's not enough. We got to do something different. Well, now we need a federal law. Look, I'm for life from beginning to end. I'm a pro-life person for religious reasons. I believe that we're made in the image of our God. I think life is precious and you shouldn't exterminate it or destroy life. But at the same time, I'm a believer in that we won the battle on Roe. It's gone back to the states. There is no winning a ban of any kind, unfortunately. There are not 60 votes for the Senate. But fortunately, there's not 60 votes to legalize abortion everywhere either. So we're at an impasse in the Senate. We just won a big victory. This is being sorted out in a very big and emotional way throughout the democracy. I'm for letting the state sort it out. Doesn't mean I'm against saying it's that we should protect life at certain stages everywhere. But for right now, politically, I think this needs to be sorted out in state by state. And some of these laws are 100 years old. They're going to have to be changed or updated or left the same. But this is going to have to be sorted out at the state level. So on this, I think Donald Trump's right.
We need to come to the realization that this question of abortion in American policy is going to take a while. This isn't going to suddenly be resolved in a snapshot. It's not going to be fixed in a series of congressional races, even a presidential election. It's not going to be fixed in who becomes the next president. It's not going to be fixed with who becomes the next justice of the Supreme Court. This is a historic question that has faced humanity for thousands of years, and it's not going away anytime soon. It will always be with us. So that's the first point of reality here, is that everyone seems to be, in the media, seems to be wanting to figure out that somehow 2024 is the finish line. I think Senator Paul is basically saying, and I would echo his comments with agreement, this debate is just beginning. We've had 50 years of no conversation. Oh, we've had protest on all sides. We haven't had a conversation. We've had 50 years of listening to the machinations of unelected black robe justices attempting to stitch abortion into the American psyche by stitching it onto obscure vapors emanating from constitutional provisions that have nothing to do with abortion. And finally, after 50 years, they drove themselves mad. They said, we can't do this anymore. It's just too dishonest. A good jurist knows you can't build law this way. And a good jurist knows that no court creates a right to anything. It's not the way it works. The Constitution doesn't even create the rights. Right? The rights are innate. They're in human nature. They come from God. They're transcendent. The American model says that our rights are above us. They're not through us. And so they came clean. Now the country's scampering around. And it's, by the way, it's not the whole country. Most people are not yet paying attention to this debate. It's being foisted on them. It's being pushed on them by high-energy media that I think is abortion more than politics. Right now, it's all politics. I think that's the media's agenda. So I wanted to throw that out and as a starter, and then I'd like to get everybody's thoughts on President Trump's recent statement, because we haven't talked about it. We've had other things come up in the news that we felt were very urgent. We've not commented at all yet here on the Public Square about the president's statement on abortion. So I'd like to ask everybody, what did you hear he said?
Well, I heard him support the United States Supreme Court in their ruling that said that they wanted to send this back to the states. And that's what I heard him say, that it became a state issue.
Yeah, that Congress was going to stay out of it, that it didn't need codified in federal law. With the understanding if it was to be codified in federal law, that it would not be codified as protecting life until week 15 or week 16.
Everybody hearing the same thing?
Yeah. Trump did what he said he was going to do. He appointed justices that were pro-life. He wanted to get rid of Roe versus Wade. It was accomplished. And now what he and his allies are saying is time to move on. Mission accomplished. It goes to the states.
Okay, so how would you define the controversy? Because clearly there was a lot of people that weren't, well, I don't know, there's a lot of people. There was a lot of people that had big microphones or big websites who were pretty upset. Mike Pence said he betrayed the pro-life community. Let's talk about this. Did former President Trump betray the pro-life community by coming up with the notion that he believed what the court said was right, and that's where the decision should stay? It should stay with the people and the representatives in the states, as opposed to a federal ban.
I don't think he betrayed anybody. He did what he said he was going to do. And I don't know about everybody else, but it's been my position for well over 30 years, almost 40 years now, that this was a state issue, that we need to get rid of Roe versus Wade and kick it back to the states where it needs to be dealt with there. Get it out of the hands of the federal government.
I think this is a place as well that both sides play politics with the issue, because there is 0% chance that it would be codified in federal law, that Congress would pass something regarding this, especially when you look at the rule of cloture in the United States Senate, needing 60 votes to forward the conversation, forward the discussion towards a vote. So the thought of Congress doing that, it's not realistic. It's not going to happen. I also think, though, some people across the country have fallen under the impression that executive orders can be done, or things can be done and written on paper, and all of a sudden that's the law of the land. And that's not how our republic works. Unfortunately, we've seen that power abused through the years by both parties when they've held residency in Pennsylvania Avenue. So I just don't think that's realistic. And I think it's dividing the pro-life community and causing people to take shots at one another.
So let's talk about the division in the pro-life community, because there's clearly a division that was manifested there. Now, it's interesting about the big five or six media sources that control everything in the echo chamber of American media, the mega media, is that I think that President Trump was set up to fail no matter what his statement was. Had he decided that he was going to go with the Washington, D.C. pro-life big money groups, who are calling for a national ban on abortion at 15 weeks, then he would have been criticized for opposing the Supreme Court that he appointed. And he didn't appoint them all, but, you know, the majority. So he would have got nailed there. Instead, he supported what the court said, and then he got slapped across the other side of the face on the idea that now the big money Washington-based pro-life groups are suddenly against him. The pro-life community is clearly split on this issue. I don't know how many fractured elements that there are, but this is one of the realities post Roe versus Wade that no one is talking about. And that's that 50 years of the pro-life movement during Roe versus Wade was fundamentally a protest movement, fundamentally using law and in an attempt to nibble away at this horrific wall of a falsely created right, and to convince America that, to convince the courts to permit there to be more restrictions that would save more lives, knowing that they could not eliminate the constitutional platform the court had created. Now the court has basically knocked down the wall. The people didn't knock down the wall. The court knocked down the wall. The court just said, that's it, we're done. And it didn't take much. When they finally came to their senses, it didn't take much to push the whole thing down. But it's almost as if the pro-life community does not have a consistently logical, unified approach with now how to deal with this. And one thing we can say for certain is in a political season, the pro-life movement being split does not pay good dividends at the polls. And you would think that there would be some momentum to fix that problem. But so far, well, all we've got is a split.
Yeah. And that split will be taken advantage of by everyone. So, all right, we're going to continue talking about this in the public square today. We're just getting started. I hope you know by now that you can listen to this program on many, many radio stations, but also online at thepublicsquare.com.
We will be right back for more on the Public Square.
Hi, I'm John Sorensen, president of Evangelism Explosion, and this is Share Life Today on KCGS Radio. Did you know that God uses ordinary people like you and me to point others to Christ? Opportunities to share our faith are literally all around us. With a few simple tools, we can speak the gospel with confidence and develop passion for those who do not yet know Him. One of the keys to sharing your faith with confidence is simply being yourself. Keep the conversation friendly. Ask questions about their spiritual life and what gives them the most meaning.
meaning. Take time to listen and understand where they're struggling and share your story about how you came to know Jesus and what difference it's made in your life. People love stories, and your story is interesting because it's unique. This will also help them understand the transforming power of the gospel in your life and how a relationship with Jesus can impact them too. All these ways help us share our faith boldly and lovingly with others. To learn more about sharing the gospel with confidence, visit our website at sharelife.today.
Family Hope Radio is brought to you in part by North Arkansas Livestock Auction. Located in Green Forest, Arkansas, North Arkansas Livestock Auction provides weekly auctions beginning every Wednesday at 10:30 a.m., as well as information pertaining to current livestock markets. They contract hauling and delivery service to the auction market. More information is available from Kirk at 870-654-2205 or Cooper at 870-654-3911.
The joy of the Lord is your strength. You're listening to KCGS 88.1 FM.
Every day, 535 people are charged with representing all of us in Washington, D.C. They preside over the largest budget in the world. They hold the Constitution in their hands. They can help protect our liberties or look the other way. 535 people. We put them in office. Isn't it time that we hold them in our prayers? A public service message from the American Policy Roundtable. Spreading the light of liberty across the land. Now back to the public square.
Let's continue now on the public square today. The question, is abortion more than politics? It certainly has been in a lot of the media in the last few weeks, and we need to talk about it on the public square here with the team. Dave?
So let's talk about this split in the pro-life community. There seems to be two approaches. One is to permit this decision as the court had laid it out to go back to the people and their representatives. Now, that doesn't mean the states. It doesn't have to stay in the states because we've got representatives in Congress. So it's not that it's the state. It's not that it's just a state argument. There are pro-lifers who are saying, wait a minute, our representatives are in Congress. Let's pass a national law. Now, why would you want to pass a national law? What would be the point? The pro-life community that's backing that is basically saying what we want is we want a number that everyone can come to terms with, a 15-week ban on abortion, and obviously exceptions for rape and incest, the life of the mother, health of the mother. They're putting together the package that does truly represent an honest, fully pro-life perspective in regards to protecting the life and the health of the mother. And now we're going to deal with, at what point in time should abortion become illegal? Okay, so that's the contention. And they want it to be effective over all 50 states. The reason they want it effective over all 50 states is because they know that there are big states like California, Illinois, New York, that are never going to pass any restrictions whatsoever at the state level. And so they want a national level of statutory redress through the Congress, through basically a law. Does anybody have a problem with that from a strategic possession? Jeff, first hand up. Go ahead.
Okay. So let's look at the pro-life states, you know, Florida, Arkansas, and so forth, that have passed rather severe restrictions. Abortion's still legal, but it's very, very restricted. You've now just repealed that in those states.
So it's like a mini Roe versus Wade.
In fact, you've now enshrined at the federal level, you've gone back to Roe versus Wade, you've enshrined abortion rights, and I use that with quotation marks around it, up to 15 weeks in all 50 states. You have removed from the state the ability to greatly restrict, or if they even want to, just completely outlaw all abortion, if that's what they wanted to do. That's off the table now. You can't do that. So thank you, those who want to pass this ban. You've actually done the opposite of whatever it is that you intended to do.
From a strategic point of view, for the pro-life community, my eyes were opened, Dave, after you sent around an article with some statistics from the CDC. And I learned that 93% of abortions occur during the first trimester. So that's before or at 13 weeks. So 13 weeks or earlier. So if you're talking about, you know, putting a week mark on it for the Congress to choose 15 weeks or something like that, looking at the stats, that really shows that a majority of abortions would be are happening before the first trimester.
Yeah. Now we want to talk more about that, those couple of articles we sent around. And I wanted to get into the debate and then sort of pull the string, if you could, for just a second. But Ann, that's a very important point. So let me make sure we all heard that. Jeff, what you're saying is that a national ban would sort of be like a mini Roe versus Wade. Let's say a state has decided that they truly like the heartbeat bill approach, that the idea of 6 weeks, 8 weeks, somewhere in that those first 2 months, that there should be a very strong effort to make certain that life is protected at the earliest, most reasonable, acceptable consensus point. And there are states that already have reached that consensus. Yes. And it is well before 15 weeks. Then we add Anna's data, which is hard fact reality, that the vast majority of abortions that happen before 15 weeks. So in essence, if you pass a national ban at 15 weeks, you're basically legitimizing abortion in 93% of the circumstances. Some states may not want that. Now it's been taken away for them. It's just like Roe. And then there's the third piece, right? It's the obvious piece, which means those states are going to have to litigate for their rights before the same Supreme Court that said they had the rights in the first place. And they're going to have to litigate the fact that the rights were taken away from them. So you see, this is not an easy, simple little, oh, this is how we fix it.
I was going to add to just speaking from we the people, it is easier to go to your state representative or your state body and change laws or change rulings like that, as opposed to going to Congress. If you did have a federal ban, it'd be much more difficult if you did want to make changes in the future to do something congressionally versus each state take on this issue.
And when you talk about this, and we talked about 93% of abortions taking place before the end of the first trimester, you know, and when people talk about codifying it in federal law and they talk about 15 weeks, you know, my question always is, where did you come up with that number? Why wouldn't you say 14 weeks or 17 weeks or 10 weeks or like it seems like, you
it
know,
seems we're, arbitrary.
We're, yeah, mm-hmm. we're just grabbing at things and talking about it, mm-hmm. not understanding the data that's in front of us that would give us answers.
Well, and it seems like we're trying to fix something that's been a problem for 50 years. And we're trying to fix it in 50 minutes, you know, and so
that's well said.
It seems like people are. They want to do something. They're so excited to finally have a chance to do something that they'll just do anything. And it's like, hang on, let's think about this. Let's think about what's going to look like 50 years in the future if we do this today. So we need cooler heads to prevail for a moment here, I think.
Well, let's do this. Let me just add a little bit more fabric in this context. Maybe the pro-life community that is emanating, the organizations that are emanating the desire for the 15-week ban are looking at New York and California and Illinois, these big states, and they're saying, we've got to have some level of limit everywhere, and we can work from that perspective and then maybe make it better. But that just doesn't seem to make any sense when you've got all these other states that are wrestling with it in the harder direction. In other words, you either have to decide the states are going to have the real throw in this. It's really going to be people reaching consensus and hashing it out with their neighbors and coming to the place where saying, this is what we will abide by or not. And that's where we've got to come down to a difficult conclusion. And it doesn't look like anytime soon that this rift is going to be solved. And so we're going to be at this for a while. And this is what Rand Paul was trying to say. This is going to take a good amount of time for people to think through all the pieces and parts and to work through their models and work through their arguments, work through their theology, work through their history, work through the science and the biology and the constitutional law, because you can't seem to get home from where we are right now. And here's why. And here's why. I found a quote in one of Dr. Allen's writings recently, and he was talking about George Washington, and George Washington was talking about the Stamp Act. He was writing about the Stamp Act, you know, the illegal act where Great Britain was exercising unjust authority over the colonies. And George Washington said this, "Law can never make just what is in its nature unjust." Let me restate that. Law can never make just what is in its nature unjust. This is a big part of our challenge, a big part of our problem, is the question of justice. We haven't really had a full, thorough, honest, generational debate about where is justice for all of the participants in this arena of public policy. And it seems that right now, the politics of this is so driving everything that we're consistently forgetting someone. We're forgetting the fact there is an innocent, unborn child in every instance in this equation. And so we're so busy arguing about weeks and times and election results and this piece and that part that we're forgetting the law. The law cannot solve this problem. Right. The law cannot solve it one way or the other. The reality is, no matter how this shakes out, the question of abortion is always going to be with us, and people are going to be making choices. So how do we put forward an ethical approach, a unified form of thought that says, here's what we believe the truth to be, here's what we believe the principles are, here's where we believe consensus is, and here's how we are best going to solve this problem. And the reason that a national law is difficult is because this is such a dramatic, difficult, personal, and corporate decision that it almost seems that it is best left to people in the regions where they live to best make the solution, unless we're willing to have the courage to say, let's have the debate on an amendment to the United States Constitution that basically declares that every child has the right to life. Let's start with an amendment. Because if we're going to start with that, then we've changed the superseding document, and that would require the consensus of all 50 states to come in. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we will continue talking about this important issue here today. Is abortion more than politics? And if you'd like to chime in on this, you're always welcome to contact us through our website, thepublicsquare.com. We need the participation of our listeners as well, thepublicsquare.com.
Right back for more on the Public Square.
Introducing the latest program from the Public Square.
Kids on the Square.
We at Kids on the Square are dedicated to helping teach the next generation through topics like Bible stories, scientific marvels, and American history. We want to equip parents with fun and free educational resources to share the truth with their children. Won't you join us? New episodes are released monthly. You can listen wherever podcasts are available and visit kidsonthesquare.com to find out more. Thank you and
welcome to Kids on the Square!
Programming on KCGS 88.1 FM is sponsored in part by Harness Boots and Shoes, located at 110 North Willow in downtown Harrison, Arkansas. Harness Boots and Shoes offers various styles of men and women's footwear, including work and western boots. Harness Boots and Shoes provides footwear brands such as Justin and Red Wing. More information is available at 870-741-5750.
Family Hope Radio is sponsored in part by United Country Central Ozarks Real Estate. United Country Real Estate provides a way to connect buyers and sellers within the marketplace. Their agents offer advice for those looking to buy or sell properties. United Country offices are located in Leslie and Clinton, Arkansas. More information is available at 870-447-2675 or online at centralozarksrealestate.com.
Broadcasting worldwide, you're listening to KCGS 88.1 FM.
Glad to have you listening to the Public Square today. These are tough issues, we know, but this is why we're here, to sort through these issues biblically. And we've got a great team to do it with. Jeff Sanders is here, Anna Welch at the table, Sherry Eisen, Rob Walgate, Alan C. Duncan. Of course, Dave Zanotti, and I'm Wayne Shepherd. Is abortion more than politics? And Sherry, you have your hand in the air to start this segment.
Now, to come back to Anna's point, I think really the way to get the most participation is that we do have to have this at the state level, because people are involved that way, and that makes a difference into the outcome and to the debate of this. If you feel that your voice is going to be at a federal level and you don't have anything to say, the participation is not going to be as great.
And I think you've seen that on people who are advocating for more and more abortions. That's how they are doing it from the state level. When you look at states across the country where they've tried to get ballot issues to enshrine, I'm using air quotes on radio, I know that's forbidden, but to enshrine abortion rights into state constitutions, that's where they're trying to do it, at the state level. We've seen Ohio, we've seen Florida, we've seen so many other states where that's the model they're using. And in doing so, they're also tying that then to United States Senate candidates and congressional candidates and state General Assembly candidates. So the other side sees that, and they're moving in that direction fast.
One of the things, Wayne, that we did is in preparing for this conversation was to send around a couple of articles to sort of test ourselves, check ourselves, and see how good are we with our understandings on what's actually happening in this debate. How's our science? How's our math? How are we doing? And so we began to ask some questions like, how many people have abortions? Who are they? Do they give us a reason why? And so we ran across some of this data. And what we did is, in fact, if you're listening right now and want to grab a piece of paper and pencil, you're more than welcome to do this. We can ask some of the questions that we asked of our team. And I said, look, no one's going to score 100 on this. No, I don't think we're going to score 100. And none of us did. We all had points of data. We went, ooh, I had that one wrong, or, oh, I didn't know that one at all. The point is that after 50 years, and again, we're not going to bury any leads here today. The point is, we've all got the rhetoric down. The question is, how have the facts changed? Now, the fundamental argument about the protection of human life, no, that's always with us. That's a bedrock principle. We get that. But what are the facts of what is happening in America with abortion? Let's start with this question. Chemical abortions, which are the pills, and surgical abortions. Which happens more often now?
I was completely and totally wrong in what I thought. And it turns out that most recent evidence is something like 52% of all abortions are through pills.
Jeff, and just the latest data that's just come in is it's at 60%, even a little higher than 60%. Hmm. And that's changed dramatically in just the last 5 years. So when people think of abortion and they think that they're all happening in clinics, that's not happening. It doesn't work that way. Now, and we could do an entire show on just how these pills actually work. We don't have time for that today, but let's just say that most of the abortions that are happening now through pills, and in most cases, in the privacy of one's home, and in most cases, prior to 13 weeks. Okay, so who's having abortions? If I ask you, let's talk about the difficult question. Let's talk about abortion based upon race and ethnic statistics. Now, these statistics are coming from Pew Research and from Guttmacher and from the World Health Organization and the CDC. And we've put together articles and sources where we try to combine all these. None of these numbers are absolute. Please understand that. We didn't invent any of them, and none of them are absolute, because there are still places that don't do as good a reporting in this field as others. But right now, if and this is, everyone answer this in your own head and your own heart, no hands, please, no out loud responses. Who has more abortions, period? Not per capita, not per scale and rate of size of population, but if we take white, black, brown, and all others, which of the racial distinctions in America, on the pure numbers, has the highest number of abortions in raw data?
The statistics say 42% of all women who had abortions in 2021 were non-Hispanic black, while 30% were non-Hispanic white, 22% were Hispanic, and 6% were of other races.
The pause is because I don't think most people would answer the question that way.
I know I didn't. When we were around the table doing our meetings before the show, I guessed white people. I thought on raw numbers. Yeah, Jeff and I were saying it's got to be
wrong.
White people. But yeah,
we were just based on the population of the United States.
Yeah, I just said numbers. That.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yes, that 12% of the population, and it's been this way for a long, long time, is black. You would think, well, then just there's just so many more other people in the country that surely the white people would have more abortions because there's so many more of them. I mean, just the simple math, it just looked like logic, but it's not that case at all. Now, what does that mean? Oh, none of us are qualified to touch that, right? And we're not even going to try. But one thing we do have to acknowledge is the fact that most abortion centers are in urban communities. It may be that they market best in the neighborhoods where they locate. I think it would also be remiss to leave off the table the reality that Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, was a racist, and that she believed abortion should be used to weed out the inferior elements of the human race.
She used the word weed, too, also.
Yeah. She wasn't talking about marijuana legalization. She was talking about human weeds.
Right. She called people human weeds.
And that was not limited to a specific color of skin. She had a number of groups that she viewed as inferior. So it shouldn't surprise us in that regard. Now, that's just part of the story. There's more to the story. So let's talk about this. Someone going in for an abortion, whether it's surgical or chemical, the makeup of the person... never been pregnant before, right? That would be the majority of people getting abortions. True or false?
That's what you would think. That's what you would think, yeah.
When you look at the numbers.
The statistical reality is what?
Well, statistical reality is 87% of the people that get an abortion are single. They're not married. 87%. Okay. That's the high number. However, and I know, Anna, you have the numbers right in front of you. Go ahead.
So 57% were in their 20s, 31% were in their 30s. And teens, you normally think a teenager, right, Rob? You think a young teen in need.
I thought this percentage was going to be higher than it was. It was 8%.
8%. Teens ages 13 to 19 was 8%. Women ages 40 to 44 were 4%. And this is from the CDC in 2021, the latest stats.
And these are pregnancies that are being terminated. This is their first pregnancy, right?
This is what really blew my mind a little bit.
60% of the people that go in for abortions have had a child, a live birth. 60%.
60% of the people are moms.
Mothers.
Yeah, you can literally hear people stopping dead in their tracks. We have to repeat that. According to the statistics from these organizations that do this reporting, we're talking about Pew, Guttmacher, WHO, CDC, 60% of the women getting abortions have already had one child. Let's think about that for a while. The theory has been that if a woman in a crisis pregnancy sees the ultrasound and comes to understand that this is genuinely a child, that they won't get an abortion. And we have statistical data, reliable data from sincere people who do this every day, that seeing and understanding that the contents of this pregnancy, this is a real human being. And if someone's seeing that the first time, it is powerful. It really helps. But the truth of the matter is, 60% of the abortions that happen in America are happening because of people who are moms who know this is a baby.
Wow. Eye-opening facts here on the Public Square, and it deserves more conversation. It'll get it coming up. Our next segment just ahead, so you stay with us or listen online. If you joined us late, hear the whole program at thepublicsquare.com.
We will be right back for more on the Public Square.
Cindy Salon and Spa is a proud sponsor of KCGS 88.1 FM. Their staff provides hairstyle services as well as nail and skin care. The salon also makes available Sarah Sinclair, a licensed massage therapist. Cindy Salon and Spa is located at 202 Zach Road in Marshall, Arkansas.
This is Gary Bauer in Washington, D.C. with your end of day report sponsored by American Values. What exactly are American values? Well, that's the subject of the raging conflict some call the culture war. It's a battle between two vastly different views of America with two vastly different set of values. Which side are you on? If you believe that America is an exceptional country blessed by God and that we have brought liberty and opportunity to more people than any other country, then you're part of the conservative right. If you think America was evil from the beginning and must be completely transformed, well, you're on the left. If you believe the United States was built on Judeo-Christian values and that our founders were committed to ensuring religious freedom, you're on the right. If you think America should be a secular nation and that religious people have no place in the public square, you're on the left. If you believe the American flag and national anthem are unifying symbols and we should respectfully stand when the anthem is played, you're on the right. If you think the Star Spangled Banner is a song of infamy and that our flag represents oppression, you're on the left. If you think the police are the good guys and deserve our respect, you're on the right. If you think the police are bigots and should be defunded, you're on the left. America is sharply divided over many issues right now, but if you believe that America is, as Abraham Lincoln called it, the last best hope of earth, I hope you'll join us at American Values as we work to defend faith, family, and freedom. In addition to these radio commentaries, we produce an in-depth daily report on the critical issues impacting our country. To learn more and to sign up for my free end-of-day report, visit GaryBauer.com. That's Gary, B-A-U-E-R.com. This is Gary Bauer signing off from Washington, D.C. with your end-of-day report.
Thank you, Golden Pawn Shop, located on Highway 65 in Harrison, Arkansas, for your financial support of KCGS 88.1 FM Family Hope Radio.
Spreading the light of liberty across the land. Now back to the Public Square.
Back with you on the Public Square. I mentioned our website, thepublicsquare.com, and don't forget about the free smartphone app, which is a really convenient way to take this program with you on the go. We're all busy, and let's face it, we have these hour-long deep discussions, and you need time. So how about that time you spend in the car or at the gym? You can take our program with you with our smartphone app, available free in your app store, The Public Square. Okay, is abortion more than politics? And let's see, Alan, do you want to kick off this segment?
Well, we ended the last segment with the sobering statistic that said 60% of the abortions that happen in this country are given to a woman who already has a child. And I think we were all amazed by that. So I think it just bears mentioning. We need to try to then think about what is happening in that person's life, that they know what it's like to give birth. They know what it's like to have a child. what would be making somebody feel like they need to abort the child, the second child that they're carrying? You know, what's happening in that person's life, in their heart, in their mind? I don't think that we can get anywhere positive on this issue if we can't understand why someone feels like they need to do that. So what do you all think?
Well, I have known some very dear friends that have had to go through that very same set of circumstances, and they were pressured into it in a severe way, and the consequences of having to make that decision was emotionally just tearing them apart. So there are circumstances where a great deal of compassion is needed in this, because it does have long-lasting consequences, and they need our support too.
There's probably so many different reasons for a woman to be afraid, or to be running away from. What are you running away from? Running away from life in some way? Why? There's probably a million reasons, and that's where I see a community, a body of believers, a church to come and rally behind a woman, to offer support, to let her know that she's not alone, especially a mother who knows that is a baby and there is a life there, that there can be help. All of those things, I think, are needed. But fear is a powerful thing. And and the Word of God says not to live in fear. And that's exactly why Jesus came, so that we could take off all of our shackles of fear and live in freedom, including the bravery to bear a child and bring a life into this world. It's one of the most courageous acts that you could ever do. But to say that there's not some fear, and any woman who's ever been pregnant can experience that. All of those things are real questions you have to deal with as a woman giving birth. And obviously, from looking at these stats, a lot of these women are unmarried. They're perhaps in poverty. They're just in difficult situations. We completely understand that. So I think it's the fear that needs to be dealt with. It's a matter of the heart.
Yeah, and I think the momentary fear of that and being overwhelmed at that moment, it's very hard to look beyond that to say this is going to pass, and there is help and there is hope, and seeing it through, there's going to be a blessing in it.
You touched on many of these women are single, and so as a man, I'd like to speak to other men that are listening. Is, you know, guys, if you're going to impregnate somebody, you need to be there to provide for that child and for that woman. And so we need to rebuild a culture of positive, good masculinity that isn't going to just impregnate somebody and leave. And we've said this on the show before, but I think it bears mentioning again in this context. So we do have an epidemic of
irresponsibility.
Sure. And it leads directly to these numbers that we're looking at right now.
Right. And also not dismissing men as part of that choice. And that's gone on for a very long time.
But we have to look at one other element that I'm not sure that we've got our arms around correctly. And again, if you got your paper and pencil and you're taking notes, here's a statistic. When you take a look at who is having abortions, 49% are below the poverty level. Now, we've talked about this. These are 60% are moms that have already had a child. 49% are living below the poverty level. Over 50% are single. The word, Sherry used the word overwhelmed. That's the word. This is an overwhelming situation that they simply see no way out of economically. And as far as just living, they just don't know how to go to this next situation. Now, we can talk all we want about the morality and all of that, but how many of us under those kinds of pressures have made different choices in our lives? Then we look back later and say, if I had to do that over again, I wouldn't do that.
Well, and because some of these numbers, some of these papers you pass around, Dave, talk about some of the times the reason that they abort the second child is because they think that it will impact their ability to care responsibly for the first one. And if someone is living well below poverty level, you could see that line of reasoning.
Sure. I mean, look, let's be real candid about conservatives. For years, there has been the endless rhetoric about women in poverty, whether they're white, brown, black, whatever, who recognize that having an additional child is a way of engaging additional federal benefits. And the whole idea that, gee, there's a logical choice. This is proving exactly the opposite. These people are not trying to have a child to get on a welfare train, no matter what race they are. These are people who are totally overwhelmed in their circumstances. The statistical data shows this. And so if we're going to be effective in doing what the law in the end cannot do, we have to bring solutions to people who are hurting at that level. And obviously, they're not getting the help they need. You see, there's not whether, and we can have a whole nother conversation about the amount of federal benefits that are available. Is it that they're not getting the benefits? Where's the breakdown? The breakdown in the family? They're not married. We can go through all that reality. And it's all important and it's all on the table. But let's remember this person that's overwhelmed. They're overwhelmed because they're poor. I know we don't like to call people poor, but they're broke. And they're in a position where they don't feel they can go any farther forward.
Well, and that's why you need an economy that can provide people with jobs that are good quality jobs. Housing. We've done shows recently on housing. You know, we don't have enough houses being built in this country. So this touches everything.
I just want to do a quick shout out to all the crisis pregnancy centers out there, because my wife has been heavily involved in that for a long time. And she works in, I would call it the stage two of the crisis pregnancy center. This is where she works, is primarily for women who are, most are poor, many, or if not most, are single, but they've chosen to keep their child. But now what do they do? They don't know anything about how to be a parent. They need diapers, they need clothes, and so forth. And if you want to talk about people who are overwhelmed, yes, those women are overwhelmed. The crisis pregnancy centers are also overwhelmed. My wife comes home day after day, basically with combat stories. Many are good of how women and their children have been rescued, but also there are a lot of heartbreaking stories too. And I just want to give a shout out to all those who are on those front lines doing that. I know you are overwhelmed, but thank God you are out there doing the heroic work of trying to help these people, rescue these people.
Yeah, it'd be a lot easier if they had more money. So I think that you can have the shout out for them and they deserve it. What we all need is a kick in the pants to ask ourselves, what are we doing to help alleviate the imminent poverty situation that is bringing people into this situation? And maybe we need to rethink how we're deploying our pro-life resources.
I'm just thinking of how few places you can hear this kind of conversation, but on the public square. I'm thankful for this team, for the topic today, and the conversation around the table. It's going to continue. For most of you, there are a few of you who have to leave us at this time, and that's where the website comes in, where you can listen to the rest, thepublicsquare.com.
The Public Square is a broadcast service of the American Policy Roundtable. Ever feel like your voice just doesn't get heard? Politics isn't just for the important people who you see on TV or hear on the news. Politics is for everyone. Don't get discouraged. You're not alone. For almost 30 years, the Roundtable has been helping people get informed and make a difference. The first step is to get the facts. The Roundtable monthly update is a great place to start. This important update can be sent to your home every month, helping you know what's going on behind the scenes and how you can leverage your impact. Thousands are reading the Roundtable update every month. Why not join them? To get your first copy of the Roundtable update, log on today to aproundtable.org.
This week on A New Beginning, Pastor Greg Laurie launches an encouraging series called Refresh. It's a look at those foundational precepts that will allow us to enjoy the refreshment of a life in harmony with God. This week, our focus is on prayer. Tune in for A New Beginning with Pastor Greg Laurie.
Listen to Greg Laurie each weekday at 5:07 p.m. on KCGS.
Why am I holding on so tightly?
to my world and all these plans of mine. Your ways are infinite, mine are limited. You give life and I wanna start living it. I will put my trust in you. I'll take my whole world, put it into your hands. I'm so tired of my
Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. You're listening to 88.1 FM, KCGS, Marshall, Arkansas.